Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Good morning, ladies. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good to be here.
Kayla, why don't you introduce us to our topic?
Okay, so it came up in the group, which is the topic of rupture to repair, which is a very fundamental therapeutic concept. And I think it's understated and underutilized. So when we talk about rupture to repair, when we look at rupture, all of us know that feeling. It could be that you have an argument with somebody. It could be that somebody has hurt your feelings or you've hurt somebody else's feelings. It could be the situations that we're talking about where somebody's asking you for money and you say no, and they block you or they back out and they don't talk to you for a while. It could be that somebody is upset with you and they say, I'm going to take my time and space, and then what? So it's like this is this constant exploration about what happens when either there's conflict or distance or people are confronting you or you're confronting somebody else, but that there's some form of a psychological or emotional split between you and the other person. And it could be somebody that you live with where you're just feeling really distant from them. So it goes from the minor, I don't feel close to you, I don't feel connected, I feel separate from you, I don't feel like you're paying enough attention to me, to gigantic blowout problems with somebody where there's this massive breach between the two of you, or somebody that you haven't seen or talked with a really long time for whatever reason. So if you think about rupture, it's this distance between you and the other person that does not feel good. That's how I define it. It could be caused by many things, but there's this distance and space that is not just, oh, I'm taking space, this is lovely and nice and wonderful. It's a problematic distance between you and the other person. So that's the rupture piece of it, which is absolutely unavoidable if you're in relationship with somebody. And this falls under the realm of what some people consider mistakes or flubbing a conversation. Like when we talk about this on the site, it's like, oh, I didn't do it right, or I didn't do it well. And that person gets upset with you and they back away. That could be a rupture as well. So what you want to do is look at this as this moment or moments in time where there's this space between. And what is absolutely essential in this concept is it's not the rupture that you want to focus on. It's the repair. How do you go from that space, that distance, that uncomfortable, problematic issue that you're having with this person and come back together with them and heal it? And in all of the psychological literature, which I will not be citing because that is not what I do, but it's everywhere. If you just look up rupture and repair, it's pretty much everywhere. What happens is the quality of coming back together, and especially how you listening to this, do that work, that is actually, it strengthens the relationship. So people, I think people walk around thinking, oh, you know, there are people I'm fine with and there's no problem and we have a good relationship. The most solid relationships have ruptures and are repaired well. So what we want to talk about today is how to do good repair. Okay, let's open this up to you guys because I've been going on, but go ahead.
Well, it reminds me of reading I've done on what were called the still face experiments with mothers of newborns. Laurie, are you familiar with these? Perhaps you know more than I do.
Yeah, no, I do know about them, where they keep a still face when the baby is in distress. And yeah, go ahead, Kayla. You
know, because this is like one of the basic trainings of therapists. It's like what happens is that all human beings need to be mirrored, ironically enough, back to the mirroring thing. So if a baby's going blah, 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 and waving their arms, and the parent looks at them and goes blah, 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 and waves their arms, the baby feels connected. And that's what we all need for a variety of reasons: to feel safe, to feel good in the world, to feel connected. So that feeling of connection is absolutely essential for all of us from a very, very young age. And how we feel connected is when people are making eye contact or seeing us and mirroring ourselves back to ourselves. And so this experiment that they did is they had this mother engage in that lovely, warm, connected way where that she was actually mirroring the baby. And then they had her turn away or come back and be flat-faced and not have any expression and not mirror. And every single baby went from feeling open and loving and expressing themselves to absolute panic. It wasn't just upset, it was panic. You could see that they felt alone and afraid and terrified because even though the mother was there, she wasn't acknowledging the baby. She wasn't reacting to the baby. She wasn't mirroring. She just went flat, which is interesting because there's the absolute walking away, which causes panic. But you could be in the same room with somebody, and if they're not seeing you and experiencing you, you could feel the same level of panic. That's a rupture. And so part of that experiment is they would watch the baby panic and they were finding out whatever they were finding out about how essential that mirroring was. And then they had the mother then start mirroring again and being back in connection. And you could see the baby's whole system calm down and was relieved. And once the baby was feeling calmer, was able to reconnect and express themselves again and have a sense of peacefulness. Go ahead, Dominique.
And the learning for the baby was when the mother had this still face, the baby would go through all of its known sort of ways of coping, of getting the mother's attention, of screaming, of saying, of looking stunned, anything that it thought it could do to handle the situation.
Crying.
Yeah, crying. And so that the mother would reengage the way she always had. And what they say in the literature is that for us to grow up strong and able to withstand these ruptured repairs, we have to learn like a baby to cope with rupture and to find a diverse set of tools for ourselves, to calm ourselves, to find success in rupture, to find repair. And so you don't want a parent who's never paying attention. You don't want a parent who's always paying attention. You want one that gives enough movement in the interactions that the baby learns. And that's so important for what we're doing because we're trying to step up, you know, provide that right distance and closeness to our own loved ones with addiction and trying to do it in a way that they will try to cope. They will respond in ways that you will respond well to. So all of that is a derivative of these very, very early tendencies from infant on to learn to cope. And what they find is if the parent doesn't ever engage with them, they give up. The kid just gives up. It's like a social death. And they live with, you know, with very few social skills, and they live with these separations, and they live with everything being broken and not able to repair. And even in biology, you can find these genes that help repair things. You need these repair genes. You need this ability to repair. So it's such a good topic for us and our listeners. I know I'm in a relationship right now that's got the ruptured problematic distance with someone, and it's kind of up to me, I can tell, to make the next move. I'm not quite ready to.
What I'm hearing in all of this is actually a couple of things. One is the rupture is necessary. The rupture is necessary for both people to learn. And so when we're dealing with someone who's struggling with a mental health condition or addiction, there's going to be rupture and probably rupture all over the place. So expecting it to happen is just an opportunity to learn, right? So expect that rupture because things aren't going well. But also there's the repair piece. And if the repair piece doesn't happen, you spiral out and you're stuck, especially when we're dealing with something so complicated as a mental health condition and addiction. So what I'm also hearing is it's really important to learn the tools and skills in order to repair. And I think the problem is when we're dealing with addiction or we're dealing with these really kind of high intensity moments, we're not really taught how to repair that. We don't know how to do it. We want to do it. A lot of us family members want to help, want to repair, but we just don't have the skills. We don't have the strategies necessary to do that, which is why I often say craft is self-care, because repairing requires you to take a look at what, one, to calm your system down. It requires you to ask, what's your piece in this rupture? And how can I now work on repairing the rupture? What is my, again, what's my role in how to make it, in how to heal this rupture? So craft gives you those skills. That's what you're learning to do, is expect the rupture. The rupture is not necessarily a bad thing. It may be a good thing. And I often tell families when they first come in, especially when things get ruptured and, you know, there is this big explosion and you're just like, this craft skill, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work. When the dust settles on the other side and you stick to these boundaries that are keeping you safe and you're acknowledging your piece in the rupture and you're, you know, you're using communication skills and now you're focused on the positive. Because to me, fixing this piece of it, the repair part of it, it requires you to turn to the positive and become empowered.
Yeah. And I think what's really essential about what you're saying, it's interesting because I was thinking that it's really important not to see this, because the word is repair, which means to fix, or in that you're in that realm. And we have to change what fixing looks like. Because to me, you know, as a person who likes to problem solve and fix things, I have had to unlearn my fix it desire in all relationships. And I just want to point out that we were talking about the study with their babies, but this is about all relationships. This is about every relationship in your life that gets ruptured. It's the same model. This is not about only the person that you're dealing with your loved one here. It's about everybody. So you get to practice this everywhere. But what I was thinking is that, to me, the old way I used to think about fixing things is that I was going to actively do something to make everything better. And part of what happens is if it's too focused on that, then I take too much power in that situation and I could actually make a mess.
Can I just kind of clean it up a little bit more?
Please.
So you are actively going to do something about it. What you're not going to do is be able to actively change the other person. You are going to have to actively work on the things that you have control over, which is you and only you. So you get to take your piece and present in this situation. The only way you can heal anything is through your actions and the things that you do. The other person might not engage. Maybe they don't know how to repair yet. Maybe they don't have the skills yet.
They don't.
We see it over and over again. They don't have the skills, which is why there is rupture and the start of the repair. The onus is on you in that moment. And you've got to kind of be forgiving and understanding and let the loved one learn as well that they might have a piece in it. But that's going to take some time. So in the moment right now, when you first get started with this, it's going to be this, you know, really emotional, difficult thing. But settling it down and then just saying, what are the things that I can make better, and start there.
Yes. And this is an essential point, because I feel like what happens is, you know, like I used to have the model of like, if you would only change, then I would be fine. And that's, I love that idea, but it doesn't work. And it actually made me feel hopeless and powerless. And all the model that we're talking about, the Allies Craft model that we're talking about here, is basically that we want you to look at your part. It's like, what's my side of the street? You know, you're looking at somebody, usually within this situation, we're looking at somebody else who has this very problematic behavior. And it's very easy to look at them as the problem. But what we're asking you to do is take steps back, pause, and look at, what are the things that I am doing that is actually not serving the relationship? That's pushing them away. That's making us both feel disconnected. That where I'm taking on too much control, or, you know, I'm trying to influence too much, and the other person is feeling oppressed by me or criticized by me or pushed away by me. And so even though my intentions may be good, and I want to really clarify this, we are not looking at intention here. We are looking at your behavior that does not work. you might have the most amazing intention, but attention is useless. You have to look at the impact of your behavior or else you can't do this work.
I think that's an important piece also. And I think we look to, and maybe someone needs to write it down, but I think we should do a whole podcast on intention and understanding intention and understanding perception. Because yeah, intention actually, it can be very frustrating when you talk about, well, that wasn't my intention. It's like, yeah, but that's how I took it. And then it can be very disregarding. But yeah, another whole podcast I think we could do on that. Yeah, Dominique?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Makes me think, you know, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous were taken from the major religions, their ideas and values taken from major religions around the world. And step 9, I'm just going to educate you off a little bit, but step 9 is about making amends to people you've harmed. This is a very old idea. It's a spiritual idea. And AA would say further, let's look at your part in it. So step 4 is about making a list of your part in things. And step 9 is actually going and making an amends. Maybe not, I'm sorry, because you'd get punched maybe, but maybe a living amends. I won't do that again. I'll try to avoid harming someone that way again. So it's an old, old idea. It's a healing idea. It's a spiritual idea. Yet I have to say, I come from the, I either stick by you or you hurt me and I am gone, gone, gone. So I am one of those problematic distance people and end up in ruptured things that stay ruptured. So how do I have one right now. It's not that serious. I know I can fix it, but I just don't feel like fixing it. I feel so upset and angry. And, you know, I've turned the whole thing into like my little victim narrative, and I want her to come back to me, you know, and which she's not looking like she's going to do.
And they don't. But that's the whole wonderful thing about all of this is once it starts to become second nature, you kind of don't need that anymore. It's kind of like, no, I'm taking ownership of my piece. If you don't, that's actually your problem, right? It's not my problem anymore. And that's maybe one day you will, but I'm the one. I don't want to do this particular piece of it. I don't want to yell at anybody anymore. I want to stop that piece of it. And that's my piece in it.
Yeah. And I made some initial understanding, taking responsibility, feeling bad, apologizing, and it didn't stick, you know, which is what you're saying. It's not going to work the first time, perhaps. And so, you know, I'm backing into it now, slowly but surely. So it's a whole strategy. It's a whole process. It's multiple efforts at different times. It's strategic. And so, can you help me with, like, what are the essential things that you want to say to somebody to repair a rupture?
You have to start with really looking at yourself, because my belief is that if I take responsibility for my part and I'm really, but I also believe the more details I could give about what I see, about what I've done and the effect it has had, you know, so for example, this is a stupid example, but I was pushing my daughter to look at scholarships. She's in college. And I'm like, I pushed her for weeks. I'm like, did you call this person? Did you do this? And finally, she was so frustrated with me, and I could see me pushing her away. Like, she just kept getting further and further. And I felt like this compulsion to do this because I felt like this is her life and I don't want to have a lot of loans. And I said that to her. So I did the whole, why am I torturing you so badly conversation, but I didn't stop. And then finally I was like, okay, what's my priority in life? My priority in life is not whether she has student loans or not, or what side effect that's going to have on her life. It's my connection with her. And I realized that if she and I are in connection, then things become more possible. So what I did was I backed up and I said, look, I realize how annoying I've been. I realize I've been pushing you. I realize I've been nagging you. I realize that I keep bringing this up over and over and over again. And I can only imagine how annoying and frustrating that must be for you. I'm letting it go. And so you're not going to hear this from me. Whatever you decide to do, let me know if you need my help. It's just a good scrap. I don't want you to be burdened with loans, but that's your choice. It's not up to me. And I let it go. And what's been interesting is the real work that I've had to do is on myself, because I said that. And now every time I think, I got to you know, what about this? And it's not like it went away like, oh, the scholarship thing is gone. I just have to, every time it comes up in my head, I'm like, let it go, let it go, let it go. It's none of my business. It's not my job. It's too invasive. And what's been fascinating is watching my daughter come back to me and, you know, we have all these chats about other things that have nothing to do with that. And she doesn't see me as this like oppressive, obnoxious, pushy, invasive species.
A poorer one, because she won't get the, she won't do the work of.
Not my job.
But also that sends the message that you're hearing her pain too.
And I trust her.
In that situation, what you're saying is, yeah, I know it's my crap. And that's why I'm trying to force it on you. And you don't have to listen to me. And it really says to her, well, you heard her, right? You heard what she was saying. Leave me alone. Stop. I got to make this decision for myself. It's like, yeah, you're right. You do. And I'm sorry. You know, I know I was pushing you. And I know it's more complicated than that when we're talking about addiction and the different things that come up. But try it a little bit. Just take a little bit of time, take that space, think repair, think how can I own my piece in this particular thing and let it work its magic.
And then how do I stick to my piece? Because you can make the repair and then ruin it in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And remember that all of these things that we're doing have excellent intentions, but they're fueled by anxiety. It goes back to the natural consequences that we talk about with the craft work is that, you know, yes, there are terrible natural consequences when people are continuing to have problematic behavior. We know that. But us, with our intervention of trying to help and fix and prevent and avoid the other person doing those behaviors, does not work. That's the point. So whether it's my daughter calling, making phone calls or writing up the scholarship thing or not, or, you know, somebody going out to use and you're like trying to do all these things to teach them and show them and give them this information that they need, it's not different. It's the same. It's us doing something that the other person is not interested or ready or willing to do. So how it comes across is invasive.
Yep.
And strategically, Kraft says this is all strategy, what you're doing, because in that connection, not only do you feel better, much better, so does your loved one, and so does their ability to come to you when they are ready for help, when they're hurting, when they're not feeling well. These are all openings that you've created by your new character, your new stance, the way you're handling things differently, that's going to draw your loved one towards you, and you'll be that interim person helping them get into treatment. You'll have that list ready, you'll have ideas, you'll know what's funded, what's paid for, what's insurance will cover. So that's where you're headed with this. You do it for its own sake, for connection, engagement, for feeling like you belong, because I think one of the most important things next to food and water is feeling connected and belonging, right? But you also do it as a strategy and craft, because you're going to feed them options. You're going to start to suggest things to them. And when they're in a dark place, or when they're a place where they feel like, man, I could do better than I'm doing. What I keep blowing it every day by drugging. I could do better. And I say it to you, I could do better. And you say, you know what? I think you could. You know, how about this career coach? Secretly SUD trained addiction counselor, but a career, you know, somebody who helps young people. Let's go see if he has got any ideas of, you know, would you be willing to see him one time, just once? If you don't like him, you have to go back. So it's a sampling. It's a small thing. It's at the end of an opening, a wish or a dip is what we call it, right? So that's all module 8. We'd lay it out for you in tips and strategy, but that is how so many families gain the success of seeing their loved ones agree and accept more help, which all of us can agree they need more help. They need more insight. They need something going on in their world that's going to change the status quo. So we're looking towards those options for them. Being connected, having them feel open and close to you is the way through. Don't bother with expensive interventionists. This is much quicker and cheaper. And it holds up. You can do it over and over again. Interventionists, you have to pay again and again and again just for that one treatment episode. So you know, in terms of intervening and getting a loved one into treatment, which was what CRAFT was always originally about, resistant people to treatment. Could we train their family to make them less resistant and get them into care? The answer is hugely yes, and it's hugely important. But what we've learned along the way is the priority of connection.
Okay, Kayla.
So basically, we're talking about rupture and repair, which basically means we're going to presume that there are going to be these moments in the relationship that feels like this gigantic rift or this uncomfortable separation or disconnect. And that is not the problem. So we don't want you focusing on that as the problem. We want you to focus on that as the opportunity. Here's this opportunity where I could show that I'm changing, I'm working on my part of this, and I'm going to approach you and take full responsibility for my part of the rift. And you don't have to take any responsibility for it, because my doing that is the most important thing at this moment. And that you allow yourself to keep doing this over and over again so that you become a safe person. And you become the person that when the person is ready to get help or is interested or has an opening, as Dominique said, that you're there. And that if they ask, that's when you get to make the suggestions, because you've become a safe person. Nobody listens to somebody that they feel unsafe with. And so what rupture and repair is that you're building up the safety muscle and that you become the safe person for this person. That's a game changer.
Okay, great. Thank you, ladies. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.